Hello, hello. Welcome to the House Einstein podcast. The topic of this podcast will be getting ahead of the curve for buyers and sellers, buyers or sellers. I am Osman with House Einstein. We're a real estate brokerage here in Boulder, Colorado. And with me is Hamish Crabb.
Hello, hello.
And welcome to podcast 18. Very exciting. I don't know how you feel, yeah. Hamish, but I feel like we're on a roll and we're having fun in our podcasts. Oh.
No, these get better and better. Do you notice anything different about my backdrop here?
I noticed that your
not sound, from today, but from the last podcast.
Your sound deadening has changed. The background has changed. No longer have the twinkle lights.
I'm at the house. Yeah.
You're at your new house. In. Yeah. New that's, place.
That's the truth.
Much faster internet.
Much faster. So
yeah,
very quick great. On the uploads, but do you want to start this off with your disclosure?
Usual disclaimer, not disclosure. Yeah. And the usual disclaimer is that this podcast is entertainment, and that's what our legal advisors would like us to remind you of. If you are a client of the House Einstein Real Estate Brokerage here based in Boulder, but we have a footprint that includes Denver and Breckenridge and Grand County, all the way up to Fort Collins, we have a presence. If you are a client of our brokerage, please contact your broker, your House Einstein agent, for professional advice with regard to your specific real estate situation. Do not rely on this podcast. This podcast is entertainment to keep our attorneys happy, especially if you're not a client. And if you are a client, just call us.
We're right here.
We're right here for you. You are our number one priority ahead of content, ahead of podcasts. You are way before we're trying to get new clients. We are serving you. You are the highest priority from a business perspective. So this podcast, what are we going to talk about? We are talking about how to make your real estate search more efficient, how to be more successful in finding the right property to acquire, whether that's for primary residential purposes or a second home or maybe an investment property. And we're also going to talk a little bit about how to be proactive and aggressive when you are selling your home and how to think about that with regard to your agent selection. I don't really know what other agents are actually doing because agents outside of our brokerage don't share that sort of information. But I can tell you from the level of follow-up I get from those agents when we do a showing, the answer is not much. And so after every showing, for example, we will call personally the person who showed the home, the agent who showed the home, to see what their client thought, to see what they thought, to ask the simple question, what would it take to bring a deal together with you or your client? And right now, the number of stale listings in Boulder has exceeded 300. And we define stale listings as over 60 days old. And we track that every week. You will find that statistic on our social media. Hamish is in charge of helping me put that together. And 300 is an astoundingly high number for our local market. The market clearly has slowed, although it's not by every price range and property type. There's variance there. But in general, en masse for Boulder County, there are now over 300 stale listings. And for every single showing, we will call to find out what that agent thought. And because I don't get the same phone calls, or it's rare I get those phone calls, my assumption is other agents are not actually doing that. So it's important because I don't know how else to say this. Like, if you don't know what the buyers thought independently, how can you adjust your listing? Maybe there's a strange smell in the house. Maybe there's too much furniture in the house. Maybe, frankly, you overpriced it and you need buyer feedback or buyer agent feedback to hammer that home to the seller that the listing is overpriced. That's the only issue. But it's not always the case. Sometimes it's also a niche listing Sometimes your listing may be the market segment it appeals to could be a very narrow slice of the overall market in whatever region you happen to be in. Here in Boulder is our local market, Denver too. If you have a niche listing, right? So for example, this property appeals to a narrow segment of the market, you have to take that into account when you are getting this feedback, when you are wondering why your listing isn't selling. And all of that is part of the proactive and aggressive approach we take when we are marketing our listings. The other thing we try to do, I would say we do, it's at least every other week, we are going through the active competitors. We're seeing who sold, what price adjustments have been made, who's under contract. And often we're seeing those listings as well before, actually most of the time, we're seeing the key competitors, if nothing else. Usually there's one or two properties that are very likely to be competition for your listing. And if you don't see them in person, it's very difficult to actually understand what this property is and what its deficits are and what its pros are. And so in my personal experience, we have made $100,000 decisions more often than not on the basis of those in-person previews to visit the competition. And that's all part of what you would think is what's called an efficient marketplace. But the real estate market is anything but efficient. And so some agents do this, but I would say it's a minority of agents that are actually visiting the competition. It's a minority of agents that are actually doing these regular, every other week at a minimum, review of active competitors. And it's also a minimum percentage, a small percentage of agents that are actively soliciting feedback. Boy, these words are, I'm struggling with words today. Yeah. Thanks, Hamish. So, so if you're, this is all the listing side, I guess I should have divided this up a little more clearly. We'll talk about the listing side first. We're almost done with the listing side. If you're thinking about selling your home, these are the questions you should be asking your listing agent.
You know, I hear really often a lot of people are, you know, yay, we listed our home. It's been a few months and I haven't heard a thing out of the listing agent. Yeah. I've experienced that. I think I heard somebody say that a few years back now. And they're just, apparently that's the norm.
That is the norm. I'm sorry to say it, yeah, but most agents are not actively trying to position a listing in the market. They're doing the minimal amount of work. And from their perspective, once the sign is in the yard and the listing is active, they're not doing
much. What else could you do? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some agents, and this is true on the high end, and we'll do this on the high end when we have, we do this on the high end when we have listings at this price point too. It's we attend all showings. And the reason we do that is because, one, it gives you an opportunity to get a read on the potential buyer, see if it's a real buyer or not. You also have an opportunity to turn on all the lights, sweep up the dead bugs, sweep up the leaves, open the big, gorgeous nano wall, and make sure the home is showing at its absolute best. Now, that type of, concierge service, I do see among a handful of high-end listings, listing agents here in Boulder. And I would say it's an absolute requirement. If you're listing over 2 million, you should plan on this sort of...
And it's actually a wonderful touch, right?
Well, so this is what I was telling my client. Like, even under 2, we do our best to attend, but you actually have a strong opportunity to influence the buyer. I have walked away from showings with my clients, put them back in the car, we start talking about the listing, and they're in love with the place. But what I'm reaching a very rapid conclusion of is that they're not in love with the place. They're actually in love with the listing agent, who's just really sweet, really positive, really energetic, male or female or what have you. They are really just vibing, right? They are sales vibing. It's the Steve Jobs aura of whatever artificial reality that they're creating.
Charisma on full.
That's the vibe these people are feeling. Like, this person was just so pleasant and interactive and connective in emotionally that they're like, this place is great. And half an hour later, they're like, this place is not great at all. And usually I've got to point out why it's not, right? Like, I'm not trying to sell it. I'm trying to help my client look past that. So, but if you are a listing agent, that is actually a very important consideration, if you're thinking about hiring a listing agent, to ask them about their personal attendance of showings, when it does and when it does not make sense. We don't offer that at every price point at House Einstein because, frankly, it is really something that is exclusive to the very high end of the market. And even at the high end, I would say it's maybe 1 in 5 agents do this. So is it a service we would like to offer? Yes, absolutely, for every listing. Is it a service we can guarantee for every showing? It is not. There's just limited bandwidth. But that's one of the reasons you're on the team, Hamish, is so that you can potentially attend those showings and give that Hamish sparkle.
That concierge, yeah.
That's right, that concierge experience.
The dazzle.
It is very important, and it is a service that does add value, but it's not the only one. And the most important one, in my opinion, is the regular tracking of competitors. It's visiting the competitors and positioning your listing in a way that makes sense within the landscape of potential options a buyer has at that given price point and property type. Yeah.
Makes sense.
So, So interviewing listing agents, these are the questions you want to ask. And this past week, we did already talk about Compass and we sort of beat up their private client network. Some of these other, I think we had that on last week's podcast, so we don't need to rehash that. But one thing I do want to mention is that I don't think it makes a difference whether your listing is wearing a Sotheby's label, a Coldwell Banker label, a Remax label, a Compass label, or a House Einstein label. The label in the yard, the yard sign has zero relationship with the effort and professionalism you will get from your agent. And most of these brokerages will hire anybody with a pulse, and they rely on their brand to convince you that that's a selling point. And I can tell you, after over 20 years of this business and years of experience with both my own brokerages that are boutiques, as well as Remax, which was not a boutique, which is obviously one of the largest and well-known real estate brands in the world, I stand by this decision. There's a reason we are an independent boutique. And the reason is largely because that brand may bring me more clients for people that don't know better, but has zero value add for buyers and sellers. And in fact, it acts like a crutch. It's an invisible little, I'm a new agent in the business. I don't do a lot of business, but I can show you the marketing for how many deals, name your brokerage, Remax, Coldwell Banker, Compass. I could show you how many deals we do, even though I haven't done a deal in your market in years. I'm going to show you the branding of how impressive Compass is. And it's just like the financial industry marketing mutual fund performance. And the investment world is actually more regulated than the real estate brokerage world. And in the investment world, you will see a lot of fine print. It's like half a page of fine print in the prospectus that tells you that they cherry picked the time period and that your investment results may not reflect past investment returns. And they are in CYA mode because they're afraid that you will believe their marketing that this fund returned whatever dollar amounts. And now you're upset that in the future it didn't. That is 100% how the investment world works. And in the real estate world, agents rely on this brand to convey status where sometimes that status is not deserved. So ask them what they're actually doing. Ask them how they're marketing. Ask them about their videography. Ask them about their strategic plan for marketing this property beyond the MLS.
Yeah. What happens if the house doesn't sell in 2 months? What's your plan then? You know, that's a good one.
Ask them what the plan is in the long run. Ask what sort of property management may or may not be included. And typically there's none included. But all of that's part of the conversation you should be having when you're evaluating agents. Some agents do a lot of volume based on momentum, and some younger or mid-career agents, I think, are actually higher performing. They don't rely on their reputation as much. And asking what exactly they're doing in terms of marketing the home, and again, beyond the MLS, what are you doing past the MLS? And if their answer is, well, it's going out on my special super secret private client network, that's not a value add. If the answer is they're actually advertising your listing on social media, the next question is how, using what, can you show me some examples? And they should be able to demonstrate this. And if they can't demonstrate it with numbers, you're probably dealing with smoke and mirrors. And one of our clients asked great questions about this, right? Like, what numbers actually matter? How do you deliver performance? And I love getting really smart, successful entrepreneurs as clients because I inevitably learn something new. Always. And I showed him, I'm like, look at this listing on J Road here in Boulder. And this video, and this is a sexy house. This is an amazing video. They did a great job. And the viewership for this video was in the hundreds. And I want to say like 150 views. Like, clear. So this is the type of marketing that was done, not because it added any value but to the seller, but because it convinced the seller they were getting value that actually didn't exist.
It sounds nice to the client. It doesn't, it's not.
Yeah. Exactly. It sounds good, but it doesn't actually return results. And we showed our client that your video is getting 4,000 plus views. And he's like, wow, what's the difference? And well, there's two reasons. One, our video quality is amazing. And you're a huge part of that, Hamish. But the other is because, frankly, we pay for the views. We are advertising. And we are advertising in our local market, not nationally. And we are trying to target potential clients, buyers for your home.
As much as we're allowed.
As much as we're, we are a little handcuffed by some of the rules that exist for real estate advertising, but it's still really powerful. And it's frankly not that expensive to generate thousands of views for potential buyers of your home. And some of these videos are getting hundreds or if even that. So ask these questions when you are interviewing your listing agent and ask how they're proactive and aggressive. Ask how they're ahead of the curve. And if they squirm, you've got your answer.
Yep.
And always interview a few agents. I'll add that too. It's really important to consider a couple of different agents in any given market before you make your final call. Don't rely on Zillow reviews. Don't rely on Google reviews. We have great reviews too. And we do our best to serve our clients at such a high level to maintain those reviews. But they can also be easily faked. And they are not necessarily reflective of true performance of a client, of an agent. Sorry.
I'll say too,
is a whole nother topic.
The MLS is the bare minimum, right? It's, if you're an agent, you need the MLS to really play the game. And if that's all you're getting marketed is that you'll go on the MLS, then you're not getting in front of everybody's eyes. You know?
It's the minimum standard.
Yeah.
And some agents are too cheap to even properly do that. Some agents are too cheap to pay for showing services, professional photography. The level of care is embarrassingly low and an embarrassment to the profession when I see listings that are that poorly marketed. I can't show them because there are rules, ethical rules. You're not supposed to disparage or criticize specific people in the industry. You can criticize specific practices, and I think it's relatively safe to throw some of our brokerage competitors under the bus, but I won't throw the agents under the bus with those brokerages because some of those, I will name the agents, and I frequently do on this podcast, that I think are doing great. And it's a pleasure to work with those professional colleagues. They are solid choices, but I won't name the scoundrels. This is not that kind of podcast.
Yeah. No. Well, that's the listing side. And we touch on that too with our competitive benchmarking. The buy side is an interesting one because it is largely automated with the MLS, though there's a lot of extra things you can do to make it a more efficient process. You know, we've had clients send us 30 homes that they want to see over the weekend. And there's certain things that we can do to kind of thin the herd and really narrow down the choices that are actually worth seeing, where maybe there's an obvious kind of element that would immediately be a deal breaker.
The buy side is a game that I feel we have reached I feel like we've reached incredible proficiency on both sides. But like most agents, I started my career representing mostly buyers and very quickly developed some competitive advantages that are not available or possible for most agents that don't have a financial background, don't have an investment analysis background. So what Hamish is talking about is how do we save time? How do we make it easier, more efficient, and more successful on the buy side. So let's talk about that. And again, this is how we are proactive and aggressive in serving our clients that ultimately when they close will be paying us tens of thousands, sometimes six-figure commission checks. And my philosophy on this when I first got into the brokerage industry on Nantucket is that these commissions are massive. How do we earn it? Like, truly, some of these agents are treating it like they're winning the lottery. And my philosophy is no. We are paid generously, and the industry is very well protected by the lobbyist organizations that protect it and the entrenched players. Those commissions are very difficult to find a reduction on. Usually, if you get a discount on the commission, you're also getting a massive disservice, and or the listing agent is double ending and you're getting no service. So the odds and the price reward relationship is really skewed. So it's usually not worth the do-it-yourself mentality, particularly if you're not in a local market, can cost you a lot of money. And even if you're a seasoned home buyer, do-it-yourself is the funny thing is people think they saved money, but rarely do they save anything. In fact, it usually costs them more. And when I hear those stories out every now and then, I mean, they're rare. If you look at the percentage of FSBO, it has dropped off a cliff. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would go the other way when I first got into this industry. But look, Pat, in the last 20 years, FSBOs, I think, used to be like 20% or 25% of the market, and now they're less than 10. They might even be 5. I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but I looked it up recently, and I was startled because I figured the do-it-yourselfers would have increased due to the internet, but the opposite has happened.
Yeah. And for sale by owner, by the way, at FSBO.
Yeah, FSBO is for. Thank you, Hamish. I appreciate that. Okay. And buyer represent themselves, I suspect, has also fallen off a cliff. And I did that analysis as part of that last podcast to talk about the percentage of double-ended deals, as well as the percentage of deals within the Compass brokerage, just to get a sense of that as a ballpark. And again, it's a tiny, tiny number. So what should you be looking for? How do we serve at House Einstein? And if I were a buyer entering any market around the country, what would I do to figure out who's the right person to represent me?
And the answer for us is it has been driven by that philosophy of how to add more value. And we do that in so many different ways. It's difficult to even know where to begin. But let's start with relos. These are relocation buyers, people that are moving into our local market from somewhere else. Once they establish a working relationship with us, we will go video the homes for them. And we're not just walking around with a cell phone. We are actually using a gimbaled, high quality, usually an SLR camera with a very fast 4K. Lens, usually 4K. And it's a stable video. And in the video, we're not selling it at all. In fact, we're doing the opposite. We're pointing out what's wrong with this house. We're also talking about what's right. But we want our client who's potentially relocating to this market to not put this property under contract and hop on a flight for a property that has visible and obvious issues that we could have told them about before they wasted all their time. Mm-hmm. And I feel so strongly about valuing and protecting my own time and it applies to other people as well, and especially our clients. I do not want to waste their time at all. So I'll never forget, this is years ago, there was a listing on Table Mesa and all of the marketing showed how cool this house was. And I was like, okay, let me just show you what this house really is. And I stood on the street and I took a photo of it. And literally you can see four lanes of traffic going by this house and a giant church behind it, none of which is visible in the listing marketing materials, right? Jeez. The marketing materials are designed to get the buyer in the door, get people in the door. And their philosophy is the more people, ultimately somebody will buy. But when we represent a buyer, our philosophy is, let me tell you what's right and what's wrong before you schedule a visit. So that's what we do for relocation clients. And those videos are sometimes over an hour long.
I was going to say too, one of the things that I like the most about these videos that we do is they are about an hour to or more. And then the clients come back and they've watched the whole thing maybe three times over. You know, there's tons of value in there and they're getting it.
Well, they don't want to, like, I don't want them spending millions of dollars on a piece of Boulder real estate. And in some cases, in a very competitive environment, right? So if you don't get your offer in that first weekend, you're not going to get a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. So we have to get that video in very quickly. So getting there fast is another competitive advantage, which is all about availability. So if you're interviewing agents, ask how available they are. And if they tell you they're always available and they never take a break, they're probably lying. Humans need a vacation every now and then. Humans have family and friends and partners, and they have dinners and they have weddings and they have nieces and nephew birthday parties to go to. And so you need coverage in order to be successful in this industry, because it's a nights and weekends gig. It's an anytime gig. And often real estate activity is happening on nights and weekends. So if they don't have coverage for when they're out of pocket, guess who loses?
The buyer.
Yeah. Well, thanks. You got it. Yeah. Well, the seller too, frankly.
Yeah.
There are all these opportunities where the seller might miss out because their agent went on vacation. So vacations are okay. In fact, I'm about to go on some myself. But my number one concern is, how am I going to take care of my clients and make sure they're served professionally? And luckily, I have an amazing team, which you are a huge part of as a licensed agent in the state of Colorado. But Ian and Sophie are also key components of that team. And
exactly.
I have deep, deep trust. I know that they're competent. They kill it.
Yeah.
They're so good at what they do. And they share our values as a company, as a group of humans that have chosen to work together. I know that they share our values. And serving our clients to the best of our ability and doing the right thing is how our team is wired. It's so clear. And so good. Honestly, it's so good to have such a good team.
We're coming off the back of a team meeting from earlier this morning. So we've still got the kind of giddy excitement off of that.
I love who we work with. Yeah. I'm not just saying that. These are people I'm proud to work with. And I did not always feel that way when I've worked in the investment community, especially. And I discovered that a lot of the conflicts in the investment community, especially in New York, were ignored. The ethical conflicts were ignored to the benefit of the investment bankers' pockets. And that's all they cared about. And they would sell family members for a dollar. They really had no ethics or integrity. And it really bothered me. That's one of the reasons I left New York, was the lack of ethics and integrity around money. Money for money's sake was a very challenging thing for me to deal with. And I would come home at the end of the day and feel bad. Made a lot of money, but felt bad. Like, this sucks. I don't want to work in an industry that's this corrupt. So I got into real estate, which clearly is not corrupt. Real estate has its own corruption going on. We could talk about that a little on a different podcast, I think. The games and the shadiness that sometimes I see as an agent. But let's stick on topic. So,
yeah.
Okay, so that's one thing to focus on when you're interviewing agents, is their availability. There's services that can save you time, like the videography we do for our relocation clients, and sometimes even for our local clients that are traveling. And one of the things that I really like to do, in addition to the normal setup listing alerts and we go see houses on the weekends, is I really want to look at what my clients want to see and evaluate them before we even schedule the showing. I don't want to put my clients in the car, go drive all over the county and look at property when I know half of these homes don't deserve our attention. And spending an hour before we schedule the showings reviewing these listings with my clients is worth 6 hours in the car.
Easily.
Easy. All day long. And that's what I consider to be phase one due diligence. Phase one due diligence is before you write the offer, right? Before you even schedule the showing, most of phase one due diligence is done. It's all about neighborhoods, property types, schools, commute distances. All of that plays in. Air pollution, traffic pollution. You can do all of that stuff before you schedule the showing. But once you see it and you're writing an offer, you start phase two due diligence. But once you're under contract, phase two really begins.
Mm-hmm.
Phase two is review the seller's property disclosure. I mean, you could do that in phase one too, and maybe you should. But phase two is really based on, what did you discover in the showing? And do you still want this house? And then negotiate the best possible contract for your buyer. And then you enter into what I think of as phase three. And phase three is based on, first and foremost, what the buyer cares about. Right? Some buyers, schools are irrelevant. And I may even tell, in fact, I always tell them, schools actually track really closely with investment performance. So even if you don't care about schools because you don't have children or your children are out of the school system, you may want to at least know that in the long run, homes that are in high-performing school districts tend to be better investments, although performance can change over time. So we developed, I should say, I developed a fairly lengthy, not to take you out of this, Hamish, but this is this has been a 20-year process, a buyer due diligence checklist. And in this checklist are, 20 items or so that I think buyers should at a minimum at least consider. And we are happy to help them investigate these items on the checklist. And schools are part of it. Commuting distances I measured, air and noise pollution, waste management even, I encourage people to think about, as well as natural resource extraction, like fracking. Maybe it's something you care about, maybe it's something you don't, but you should probably know that people are increasingly concerned about this, especially in a place as environmentally conscious as Boulder. There's also the process, of course, of scheduling your primary and secondary inspections and what they discover, and then the secondary follow-ups after those inspections in case you want to get estimates from multiple contractors, building in time for all of that so that you go in with eyes wide open. So the philosophy for the buy side is eyes wide open and know as much as possible about a property before you run out of contingencies. And in a lot of cases, some of these homes are not even worth writing an offer on, right? So there's no point if you know there's a deal killer, and we can find that deal killer before you wrote the offer. But once you write the offer, I want to know what the deal killers are and have a kickoff meeting to go through them with you to make sure that as a buyer, we have addressed those issues to your satisfaction. One of the most important things is that due diligence is a bottomless hole, right? Like, you can just keep going and keep going. Mm-hmm. There really is no end to due diligence. It's up until the point the client or the buyer is satisfied with the due diligence. One important piece I forgot, Hamish.
Go for it.
And that is, we are technically, as real estate agents, not supposed to be doing due diligence. The lawyers who advise us say, holy cow, you shouldn't even be mentioning the word due diligence
to your client. Don't say inspection. Don't say due diligence.
Don't say these words. My God, you'll be liable for anything they discover afterward. Well, I discussed that with our legal advisors and came up with some verbiage that's in our buyer agency agreement that basically carves out or caveats that, which it says Osman or other agents on the team will support your due diligence efforts, but due diligence is not a duty of a real estate agent to a client, and this is here in Colorado, and not a responsibility of a agent to a buyer, and that buyer accepts full and complete responsibility for due diligence on this home and its investment performance. And the reason we put that in there is because I can't have somebody suing me because the plumbing broke the week after closing,
right?
Or maybe, the week after closing, somebody, maybe there's a fire and the value of the homes have all diminished, or maybe there's somebody next door who, starts dealing meth, right? And now the neighborhood value has been crushed. And even though crime was a due diligence checklist item on our list, you didn't do it, or we missed it, or you missed it.
Or crime is random, help.
One of the most important things we can do is encourage buyers to think about it. Like, Maybe you didn't think about sex predators in your neighborhood, and most of them were low-level offenders, but maybe there's actually a violent offender in your neighborhood, and there are ways to discover that through registries, through contacting law enforcement, and most importantly, through talking to the neighbors and getting on Nextdoor and other neighborhood lists and find out what's going on in the community. Asking the question in those forums can answer your concerns as well.
Yeah. A lot of these things are obvious when said, though you wouldn't necessarily have it in the back of your mind ready to go. And that's where this list comes in to be extremely helpful, right? It's these catch these before you forget, or, you know, ask before you realize that you didn't.
Right.
It's an incredibly handy checklist.
And some of them are not, I mean, many of them are not covered by the real estate commission contract.
Mm-hmm.
There's no contingency in the contract for my neighbor turned out to be a Nazi, you know, Nazi flag waving Nazi, right? Racist, yeah. Whatever person. That's not in the contract. So what do you do about that? Well, the buy side, I mean, if you haven't given away your contingencies, right, in the offer process, you offered with the standard protections in place here in the state of Colorado, then you basically have carte blanche to terminate the contract for any reason you find unacceptable. As a buyer, the contracts strongly protect buyers. By the way, I'm going to add that if it's new build, it's the opposite. So new build contracts almost exclusively protect the seller and contractor and developer. They don't protect you. And it's one of the most frustrating things. I always warn my clients that want new build. I'm like, we can help you, but our hands are cuffed. And the level of protections you get with new build are a fraction of what you get when you are buying a resale home that's already been owned by somebody. And I don't know why DORA is not all over this. I think that they need standard contractor contracts. Because right now it's a joke how little protection buyers get with new build.
And purely anecdotal, but I'm hearing these new builds leave a lot to be desired in fit, finish, and quality control in general.
They often have more problems than homes that are 5 or 10 years old. Yeah. Especially when there's been a contractor labor shortage, like there has been in Colorado for years. Like, so you have no idea if this home was built well or not. And a lot of that's hidden behind the drywall. You won't discover the bad grading until the first flood.
Yeah.
Right. And now you're chasing this builder. So some of them, by the way, have pretty good quality control. The larger ones are pretty good, but the smaller ones can be all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
These little spec homes built by a custom home builder in town, you're often relying on their reputation. And if they're selling it to you from "see you later, I'm on a plane to Mexico, LLC, or in the case of the homes you bought, I can't remember the name of the LLC, but it's "don't call me, I'll call you."
Yeah.
We won't mention it.
It's a fun name.
Don't call me, I'll call you LLC. Well, you've got your answer, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just assume they're shady and what you're dealing with is a poorly built, shoddily built product, but boy, it sure is pretty. I'm usually with flips representing the buyers, we can see pretty quickly that it's poor quality.
Yeah.
There are lots and lots of signs of haste and poor attention to detail. And all you have to do is look past the lipstick, right? Look past it and you will see it. And if you know what you're doing and you've been in this industry a long time, you could see the difference between high quality finish and not.
And because
you can see the difference between alder and like press board, you know, cardboard finish, right? Mm-hmm. It's a huge difference in the choices people make when they own it and they build it for themselves versus they are building it for profit.
All this to say, it's subjective too, right? In my example, we kind of noticed that it was a bit of a flip job down in the basement, and that was, I mean, I'm okay with that. The majority of the work was done. There could be some surprises. There was. But, you know, in the due diligence process, I just wanted the name of the people who did the work, because maybe I'll end up using them, or I can ask them about how they went and did the work. So when I go in, you know, I can plan accordingly. I think that was something that I'm quite grateful that I have the contact information of those people.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. For a flip, that's a minimum request. And if they don't want to give you the list of their subs, that's a pretty strong point.
Yeah.
And you know, going into a flip that, yeah, it may not be the perfect one, but that still doesn't mean you shouldn't buy it, because there is convenience to having it done 90% right. You just need to know that it's not 100%, and nor will it be 100%. And likely you're going to be chasing down all sorts of weird things happening.
Mold.
Poor quality control issues.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you shouldn't buy it. Maybe you should, but you go in with eyes wide open. And you did. You knew it was a flip. There was no surprise.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I think it was my tolerance older flip.
For it.
Yeah.
Yeah, our current... Go for it.
You're in the industry. You've got relationships. You can get things done far cheaper than most. You have great friends that are helping you too. All of that. Plus, as an agent, you can also discount commissions when you can eat your own commission when you sell it. So you have a built-in discount when you sell it that you don't have to pay the sell side.
although right. you're doing work, you're just eating the cost of that work. You're not paying two agents 6% to sell your home. Most people don't have that privilege. They're paying somewhere between 5% and 6% here in our local market to sell their home. Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of things fortunate. Yeah.
Well, in addition to all the unexpected construction costs and repair costs of, oops, the plumbing broke the week after you did all the work. Look, I had this happen to me.
So
and we did everything right.
Yeah.
We did everything right. I hired the best contractors I could find. I personally was on the site hammering and paying attention to every detail. And 2 weeks after the work was completed, the tenant called me and was like, the ceiling's leaking. I'm like, this
worst
sucks.
News.
Turn off the water. I will be there. Cut out the leak. Deal with any dampness. Get the air dryers in there. Make sure there's no mold. And it's just a stupid plumbing fixture in the tub above. And it wasn't even our work. It was work that had been done decades earlier.
For it to drip through the drywall, that's got to be a lot of water.
Well, what happened was it leaked through a fixture. So that was suddenly leaking through. It didn't sog the drywall. What happened was that the tenant had upstairs had two little kids and they were using the bathtub. And the bathtub had not been used in decades. And their overflow valve or whatever, kids are splashing. And suddenly there's water. It wasn't the splashing, though. It was the overflow valve, I think. Or it was just the drain. I don't know how it was the shower system, though. There's some sort of plumbing thing in the back of the shower that was causing it.
Well, fixed now. I'll say on the due diligence things and why this list is so handy, I'm kicking myself for not necessarily referring to it. But that being said,
you didn't look at it, did you?
No, I didn't.
Well, I mean, this is the thing, right? In the heat up, writing offers, finding a home that works, potentially getting a shot at it, falling in love with it. No one wants, like, you're out on a date, right? And you've been dating somebody for a while. Who asks for their medical records before you go on a third date or, you know, get married? Like, no one does that.
Yeah.
That's what you're effectively doing buying a home is you're asking for the history and you're doing all this due diligence and research.
And
but your emotions are saying, shut up and buy it. Well, this is
really
why your agent's job on the buy side is to calm you down, make sure you really want this house, and help you negotiate a good deal. And sometimes a good deal is just getting a seat at the bidding table. Sometimes a good deal is negotiating a strong discount to the list price. And sometimes a good deal is having an agent represent you and your best interests in the secondary negotiation over inspection.
Mm-hmm.
And what's reasonable and fair and what's ridiculous? And what's a reasonable number for a 25-year-old furnace that was a surprise, right? Like how do you solve these things in a way that gets the deal done but is fair to both parties and gets your interests met? That's your agent is supposed to be advocating for you on the buy side.
Yeah.
Not every agent does, but that's what they're supposed to be doing.
Absolutely. I think a lot of buy-side agents rely on the MLS listing alerts. They'll go through maybe if there's something extremely obvious. Well, this is another thing, right? Your agent has to proactively disclose anything they see on the showings. And that's huge.
But they don't.
Right.
But they don't.
Yeah.
And this is the part that blows my mind. The listing agent knows and doesn't disclose. The buy side agent walks in and pretends they didn't see it. They don't. I mean, this is my personal experience. I'm not on these showings, but the stories are all over the place.
Right.
But my agent never told me. There was, I follow the Reddit for real estate. There was one this week. I tweeted about it that these people bought a house and didn't realize it was a bat infestation, a migratory bat infestation.
Those eat mosquitoes.
Thousands of bats in the belfry.
No way.
Literally raining down feces and urine into the drywall. And the seller clearly knew because they lived there for 2 years before. And this was not a new thing. And I don't know how they missed the bat infestation. Oh, maybe the bats weren't there. They're seasonal migratory bats. That's how they weren't there during. But the inspection report said evidence of rodent infestation. And the buyers are like, mice. What do you expect? It's an old house. Nope. It wasn't mice.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Wow. I'm just imagine that for a minute.
Like the first or second bat you are in their house. And next thing you know, there's hundreds and thousands of bats that are just roosting in your attic.
Imagining, you know, you open up your attic hatch and you look in and there's 1,000 eyes staring back at you. I think I'm just going to go back downstairs.
Oh my God. How do you, like, this person's like, I think the house is a total loss because it's going to, we've gotten estimates of whatever, $20,000 to get the bats out and fix all the damage. And that's puts us upside down in the house. We're just going to walk away from it and screw our credit. I'm like, wow. Holy cow. That's like the hand the keys to the bank in self-destruct mode.
Yeah. Secondary inspections.
So inspectors are very likely to punt. If they see a small belly in the sewer line, if they think the furnace is old, if they walk the roof and see a little bit of hail damage, they will say buyers should consult with a professional contractor that specializes in this field. Even if they think it's no big deal, because they are also in CYA mode. So what can you possibly do in those circumstances? I think the answer is hope that your agent has good relationships with quality contractors that do this service without bending too far in either direction, right? You don't want a contractor that is best friends with the real estate agent, because then they are compromised and likely to under-evaluate. Mm-hmm. And you also don't want a slimeball.
Yeah.
An alarmist who is going to scare the hell out of you for something that actually isn't a real issue. And so the middle ground is what you're looking for. And you may want to get two opinions depending on the severity of the issue. We had a house here in Table Mesa I put under contract for a buyer a few years ago. And our inspector said the house looked fine, but I noticed the house had a bunch of repairs on the fascia. So this was a brick veneer house, like a lot of South Boulder houses. And the edges and the walls looked like they had been repointed. You could see there was a difference in the color of the grout. And there were some step lines that had been patched. And I said, it looks like it's been addressed, but you may want to get a structural inspection. And my client, whose family was in the construction industry, said, hell yeah. And we ended up hiring a local company. I think I'm going to mention them, but even though I've heard, you know, word on the street, I haven't heard all positive things, but we've had only positive experiences with them. So personally, I'm going to go ahead and mention their name. Excuse me. They are Van Mater here in Boulder. And their primary person who we've dealt with is Lance. And Lance came out and he did a structural evaluation. And I was there for the entire thing because I wanted to learn how a structural evaluation is done. So Van Mater is not a structural engineering firm. They are a structural repair company.
Mm.
And he went through with a long level on every single wall. And after walking the whole house and looking at every wall, the conclusion was the whole box is leaning. The foundation, think of it as a box.
Yeah.
The front and the back wall of this box are leaning forward down the hill at a significant angle.
Sheesh.
And this home has had serious structural deterioration, and we don't put the box back upright. The cardboard box or whatever, the foundation box never goes perfectly square again. But what we can do is install helical piers around the outside of the foundation, which I think of as giant drill bits, right? They go all the way down a bedrock.
They're like augers almost.
Yeah. And then you bolt the foundation at certain distances apart to these helical piers. There are also other things they can do. They can do, I can't remember what they're called. They're like these giant concrete formations in the corners of the foundation. They can do that too. There's all, it depends on the severity, but the estimate was $100,000
easily.
Did not include the landscaping. I mean, this is, we're in an expensive market. Let's face it. This might be a $25,000 expense in some other market, but here in Boulder, it was $100,000 bid. And we notified the listing agent that, look, we've got a structural issue. And he and notified his sellers. They immediately contacted a structural engineer whose name I will not mention, who came out and wrote a letter and said, the foundation is fine. And they sent that to me. And I sent it to my client. I'm like, well, this is interesting. Is it okay if I send them Van Mater's report? And she's like, yeah, send it.
Please.
So I did. And Van Meter. So the structural engineer called Van Meter. Both of them went back out to the house together.
Oh, cool.
And 2 days later, the structural engineer rescinded their letter, apologized, blamed it on not having a long enough level, and refunded the seller's money to do the structural evaluation because they were wrong and Van Meter was right.
Nice.
We terminated because they weren't going to negotiate. They were in denial. The sellers had moved to Denver. They had bought another house, and they didn't want to hear it. So we terminated. Wow. The deal ended. A week later, they called us. After a week of thinking about the reality of this, you can't sell a house. You as a seller now know you have a home that has a structural defect that is significant. Your structural engineer has withdrawn their letter saying it's okay. You have a detailed report saying it's broken and an estimate for $100,000. Your agent is also required to proactively disclose. Maybe you have a slimeball agent that isn't going to do that, but they're required to. And you as a seller are required to disclose. And if you don't do these things, you are massively liable and you're not flying out of the country. You're living in Denver. Somebody's going to come knocking on your door if you sell this house. But first of all, you should never do these things anyway, okay? Like, you should be ethical and have integrity all the time. But let's say you don't. Even if you're a slime ball that just wants to sell it and leave, you're not leaving the country. No. Like, the cost to get you isn't that high when you live in Denver. So anyway, it took them a week to come to Jesus experience or come to your religious figure. I don't know. Pick one.
Nice.
And after that week, the listing agent called me back and said, look, if you're willing to come back to the table, the sellers will credit you the cost of the $100,000 structural repair. Wow. And that was fair because the buyer was going to have to pay for landscaping. And so both of them incurred some pain. The seller incurred a $100,000 repair bill, and it ended up, yes, being, I think, slightly over that number. And my client ended up incurring a landscaping re-landscape the property bill. I think she was planning to re-landscape it anyway. So it worked out. And plus this home was so rare. Mm. It backs to a little peninsula of technically open space. And only mostly the homes that back to it have access to it. I guess there's another way to get up to it, but it's almost entirely just the owners who surround this little peninsula of open space that go up there. So there's a social trail or two into it, and there's like a bench, and it's clearly a neighborhood get together and have a cocktail hour at sunset. It's a community backyard with views over all of Boulder that are epic. So it was worth it. But holy cow, that was quite the experience with structural repairs, sellers that were in denial, thorough due diligence, a giant surprise because I didn't think the structural engineer was going to find anything either. Mm-hmm. I thought there were signs of past repair work, and so it'll pass because it's been repaired.
And you're talking about the only thing that was.
Yeah, the only thing that was repaired was the veneer. So brick is wonderful because it will show you movement. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not a brick house, it's a brick veneer house, it will show you movement. I love that for a due diligence perspective. There's other issues I don't like about brick, but the fact that you could see what's happening with this house is really useful. And as an agent, I pointed it out to our buyer. I did our job. And I think our client's really happy. She still owns the house.
That's a good sign.
We should probably reach out to her. I loved working with her because she's just so smart. As many of our clients are, they're just really smart people. And they're disciplined. My favorite clients are the ones that are entrepreneurs that have worked for it. You know, they didn't come from affluence. And certainly we're happy to represent anybody, no matter your personal background, religion, skin color, gender identity, all of those things. Even your politics, as long as it's not offensive and don't share it with me. If you think it's going to be offensive, don't make my job harder. Yeah. Just don't tell me about it. Okay. Either side, by the way, red or blue. I just really would like to keep that out. But most of our clients tend to be blue. My favorite clients are the entrepreneurs that worked for it, are really successful, really smart, really driven. And she's all of those things. And I really enjoyed that process of helping her with that transaction. And that was my first six-figure structural repair job.
Yeah, that's a huge one.
Is that making you nervous, Hamish?
Yeah, I have a stair step on my veneer.
All right.
I might go mortar that up this afternoon. Just pretend like it doesn't exist for however long the building will collapse on me.
Well, hopefully it's a home you own forever. And if the foundation shows signs of more movement, you're going to need to stabilize it. But you're not in the city of Boulder, so your costs won't be as extreme. But there will be some costs. No getting around it.
Yep.
It's the joy of being a homeowner.
Thanks. Excited to be here. The I rented a home in South Denver a long time ago, and they had the helical structural bolt, the foundation, to hold it up. It's just a crazy type of engineering device. It's really interesting to kind of see and hear about from all angles, from like a nerd perspective, right?
It's really not that I mean, it's sort of like when the first time you see orthopedics on an x-ray.
Yeah.
And you look at how crude it looks. It looks ridiculous, right? Like they broke your bone, cut it in half. They screwed it together with titanium plates that have little – it's rough mechanics. Yeah. And that, I think, is pretty much the same thing with foundation repairs, is it's rough mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And if your helical pure estimate is $100,000, you may want to think about just lifting the whole house up and pouring a new foundation. Because you're in the ballpark. You're in the ballpark for an entirely new foundation at that point. And it's something we used to do all the time on the East Coast, on Nantucket. I've seen it here in Colorado too, mostly with historic homes. They lift the whole house up, dig out a new foundation, a real proper basement.
That cannot be cheap, man.
I mean, in the context of a $3 or $4 million home or $5 million home in Newlands, it makes sense to spend $250 on a new foundation. That's what I would expect it to be.
Yeah.
For a home in Westminster, that's typical single-story ranch. Maybe it's rather than doing it as part of a repair, it's doing it as part of an investment for a new home, right? Like, so there's a house in Martin Acres on 33rd Street. It's at the corner of 33rd and Dartmouth.
Oh yeah,
roughly the corner. That house is incredible. Yeah, that house, I was not there for the construction period. I lived on that street for a while, but that particular house, the owner did amazing things. Like, it is an entirely different home. And I think what they did was they basically poured a giant, heavy foundation with 9 or 10 foot ceilings. And so the home towers over everything around it. I mean, it is so, it's beautiful. It's a little out of place given how small the other houses are on the street. Obviously they didn't violate any of Boulder's extensive rules building it. But clearly it's a foundation up. It's like everything was done. It wasn't a remodel. It wasn't a pop top. They went and spent a lot of money building what is an amazing and impressive home.
Yeah. Well, I think we've reached this. How about you?
You feel like we've beaten it up enough? Buyer due diligence.
I think so.
Again, the theme was proactive and aggressive. And you can hear that this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart about how to serve people incredibly well. I probably have done 95% of the talking based on my throat right now. I apologize for that, Hamish.
Oh, you're fine.
But I'm passionate about this because I feel like this is our competitive advantage as agents at House Einstein. And as a team of agents at House Einstein is getting ahead of this, is really doing the best possible job at serving our clients and their needs in a way that I think very few agents do. It's unfortunately not as scalable, right? This is not a business model that is easy to replicate. It's not a business model that easily scales because it takes a certain type of individual.
It's very individual.
And that type of individual usually get into sales, right? This is the type of individual that's an engineer at Boeing, right? This is the type of person that is a financial analyst. This is the type of person that cares about due diligence at a passionate level because they care about people being smart about their money because that's frankly, how I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
It was the stories I heard over the dinner table about people being dumb and in the medical field and about the prudence and care with financial resources my parents showed in most of their financial decisions. They can be a little bit erratic sometimes with their decision making, but mostly they're really thorough and they love negotiation. I think I've shared on this podcast, I've seen my mom when I was growing up try to negotiate with the checkout clerk at the grocery store over the price of the tomatoes.
Yeah. Like, they don't do the bartering.
Maybe it's a cultural thing, the desire to haggle, or maybe not, but I like it. It's a bit of a blood sport. And ultimately my clients make the call on how aggressive we're going to be. More often than not, I'm more aggressive than they are. More often than not, I'm telling them not to buy the house they love.
I usually don't say it more than twice.
Yeah.
Because if I say it more than twice, now I'm like, you know, kind of a jerk. Like, I don't think you should buy this house because it's on a yellow line street and there's a fracking well that's in the open space you love so much in the backyard, and it's visible and obvious and it's not going away. And you're really close to US 287 or whatever, which is tons of air pollution. And it's not just electric cars, it's the tires that are creating that pollution. I don't think you should buy it, but you clearly love it, and I'm not going to say it again. Like, if you want this house for your reasons, and you, they will share the reasons with me, my job is to help you get the best deal, period. And make sure there's no other creeping due diligence. And so that's all being aggressive and proactive on the buy side.
Yeah.
And on the sell side, it's just advising our clients on market conditions, professional marketing, and regular tracking and feedback, and making sure we're well positioned, especially for niche listings.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay.
That's it, Hamish. My throat's dry.
Fantastic.
And we are roughly at an hour. I'm Osman with the House Einstein podcast. And Hamish and I are part of a real estate brokerage here in Boulder called House Einstein. We serve clients from South Denver all the way to Fort Collins and into the foothills. We are in Summit County and we've just entered Grand County. If you're looking for real estate services on the buy or sell side in those markets, we are happy to represent you. Reach out to us and you'll find us at houseeinstein.com.